Welcome to The Daily Decrypt, the go-to podcast for all things cybersecurity. Get ready to decrypt the complexities of cyber safety and stay informed. Today is January 29th, 2024. Here is your host, Doja Span.
Good morning and welcome back to The Daily Decrypt. Today we'll be discussing malicious software ads, network and security standards, and wrapping it up with some new info that came to light from the Microsoft breach we reported a few weeks ago. So let's dive in. First and foremost, I wanted to discuss this concerning issue. This was brought up in a recent article by Krebs on Security. It's titled, "The Risk of Encountering Malicious Ads on Google When Searching for Software." This one was kind of interesting to me as, well, being in tech, looking for software, searching the internet. Basically, what's going on is that threat actors are exploiting Google's ad system to track users into downloading harmful versions of popular software. Google is trying to remove this, but it's a tough game to keep up with. You know, these threat actors are paying for ads and they're getting their malicious software up there in popular searches. So, like I'd mentioned, malware-infected servers, that is first and foremost when you're searching for things. That's not good. Well, why it was interesting to me is that this can affect anyone from, you know, some of your most seasoned IT sysadmins all the way down to the regular user who's just, you know, looking for a free version of, let's say, Microsoft Office or something like that. And it, even though this article might highlight just desktop software, a lot of this could expand beyond just desktop software. You could be searching for an app, a free version, or, you know, Android. A little bit looser restrictions than Apple, of course, when it comes to the App Store. So you could easily stumble across something that is just going to be total spyware, key logging, anything else that's on your device. So to dive a little bit more into this article, it's reporting that cyber criminals are creating ads to appear legitimate. On with this, they're ranking above the general software sources. A notable example was the FreeCAD website found by the researchers in this reporting, which was leading users to download this compromised software. How this was discovered? Well, few researchers were monitoring this kind of behavior over the past few years, and some domain research that revealed the malicious site, which is freecad-us.org, is a part of a network of over 200 domains hosted at a single IP address. And a lot of these domains also, well, they mimic different popular software. You could probably see, you know, like I mentioned, Microsoft Office or the other open source alternative. I can't think of OpenLibra. Feel free to correct me in the comments. Along with some of the other software review sites, and overall just creating a large-scale deceptive operation. As they continue to investigate, the domains show that they serve fake software and really just distributing malicious infected software into, or sorry, infected versions of legitimate software. So taking an old version, pre-packaging it with whatever they want, and posting it up there as the newer version. So it's really a good deception tactic and something that we should all be aware of. Google has been making efforts to remove it, and they've removed billions of bad ads, but these campaigns persist. It's becoming, well, difficult to vet every single ad that you purchase through there. In summary on this one, it really just boils down to the vigilance. And like we've mentioned before, just being aware of what you're going after, paying attention to the domain names. You know, if something looks like Microsoft, but the domain is a little bit off, maybe with a one instead of an I, or a zero instead of the O in the Microsoft, might be something to pay attention to. And then take your time with it. Hopefully you're not scrambling to find some word processor so you can get an assignment that's due tomorrow morning done. But yeah, something that you should be not diving into immediately. Moving on to the next one here, we have the NRC issues recommendations for better network and software security. I kind of like this one, brought to us by Dark Reading, and it outlines recommendations issued by the Network Resilience Coalition, the NRC. They're aiming at, well, improving network and software security. So to give a little bit of background on who and what the NRC is, they were established in July of 2023 by the Center for Cybersecurity Policy and Law. And what it is there, it's a group of network operators, IT vendors, and their overall goal, of course, just to improve cyber resilience. Some of the members that make up the NRC are AT&T, Cisco, Fortinet, you got Juniper Networks, Palo Alto Networks, VMware, Verizon's up there as well. And this article highlights the latest white paper that dives into software development and lifecycle management. Now, this is a huge issue with a lot of open source projects out there and even, well, closed source as well. So ultimately, this is just emphasizing aligning with the Biden administration's executive order and CISA's security by design and default guidance. They're advocating for software development methodologies to be mapped with NIST's Secure Software Development Framework, the SSDF. Additionally, the NRC is supporting the OASIS Open EOX initiative, which essentially just standardizes the communication of end-of-life, end-of-support software and details that the products in a machine-readable format. So really, it's all about transparency with this one. Organizations are needing to adopt a secure build environment. This article mentions the initiatives to shore up software development process and improve security beyond critical infrastructure. And like I had said, it's about transparency. So trying to give people an idea of what's under the hood without giving too much information. And with closed source software, there is a growing dependency on open source software. And of course, things going end of life, end of support. And they're requesting that these organizations are developing a rotation of monitoring this and disclosing this information. That And one of the ways to do that is, of course, you know, providing what's called SBOMs, software bill of materials. This is just kind of a big deal as I've rotated out through various organizations and seeing things. There's just a growing, like I said, a growing dependency on open source software, and it's across the board. And we really need to have an idea of what is under the hood, especially when we're installing things, because you might have some sort of dependency. Let me back it up. Your software might be supported by you. You have everything up to date as far as you can tell, but then something under the hood is relying on an extension or something else that is end of life. And now that little piece could be the vulnerability that essentially lets an attacker exploit your up-to-date software, or as you may advertise it, up-to-date software. But I really like this because not only is it promoting the transparency of software, it's also getting the private and public sector a little bit more aligned with software development and cybersecurity. We really need to work together on this. It can't just be coming down from the government, as there's a lot there already that they have to weed through and push out. And we need to rely on what's happening in the public sector. And that's where we see a lot of this stuff. And even there's a lot of really good research that's happening out there. So I like to see this cohesion happening. But ultimately, cybersecurity is complex. And we really need cohesion amongst all entities and just promote robust security practices. Last but not least for today's episode, wanted to revisit the Microsoft breach that we previously discussed. There's quite a bit of new information that was released. The attackers known as Midnight Blizzard, as we reported last time, they got into Microsoft's network through password spraying and then managed to escalate themselves up. So this, of course, was accomplished by exploiting weak credentials on a legacy non-production test account. This account didn't have MFA, and this is, unfortunately, it's rather easy to, it's easy oversight. Something you can accidentally do as you're spinning up stuff within a M365 environment or Azure or really anything. You might have created this account to test a couple things and you decided you wanted as much privilege as you could so you could get things done as quickly as possible and the least amount of roadblocks along the way. So not having MFA or something along those lines, and inherently this account was unsecure and you had it in the back of your mind that, you know what, this sprint is only going to be a couple weeks. I'm going to have this account active. I'm going to knock out the tasks that I need to. Then I'm going to delete it. And then, sure enough, at some point in time, we forgot that we needed to mark down that that account had to be deleted. So knocking out the work, jotting down the research, and sprint ended, concluded that task, moved on to the next thing. Well, the attackers found this account, and once they had access to it, this is when it gets a little bit more interesting because they were able to register an OAuth application and that essentially granted them full access to the Exchange Online that they had and, well, allowed them to read mailboxes. Now, this is something that I see constantly throughout M365 environments. I work within that space and one of the things that we're always looking out for are application grants. You can limit this within the administrative settings of your M365. And what these applications do is you'll see it if you ever try to add like a Jira integration or Slack or something to your Outlook. It prompts you, it says, you're requesting access to this application for your M365. It wants, you know, read all emails, wants to read user accounts. And that is essentially how they started getting access to the executive accounts and had full access to read the emails and so on. And one of the ways that you can avoid this is by disabling that feature or requesting admin approval. And then, of course, the admins need to do their due diligence and review and make sure that it's not something that they're granting. And a lot of this is that we're finding is even legacy. It's not even something that's being thought of ahead of time. These permissions were already in place. So then a user goes ahead and adds the application because it came in through an email that they had to do. And now an attacker has a foothold within the environment. So kudos to Microsoft for being transparent with this, even though their details are slowly becoming, well, not slowly becoming more vague, but they're slowly distributing this information and attempting to be a little vague. But overall, I'm impressed that they're being transparent with this because, like I said, covering the last article there, transparency is key. We can all learn from everybody's mistakes and let's move forward as a collective whole. We can grow, we can enhance security together. Now, Microsoft did have a lapse in security, so I'm hoping that they're tightening things up. But overall, I think we're moving in the right direction, especially seeing more and more companies coming out and disclosing this information. Well, that's all I have for you today. Let us know what you're thinking of the episodes, if there's specific content, or if you just have more questions about the content that we're covering. Happy to discuss it with you. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.